You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is June 14th, 2021. Well, inflation, is it here to stay? Is this the 1970s all over again? Hey, and what about those crypto kleptocurrencies? They've taken a hit. Is it all full steam ahead, bullishness, or do we go through another bust? Or have we gone through the bust in Bitcoin, in cryptocurrencies, only to emerge even stronger and see these things really take off for the moon? And where do you put your money next? And our good friend Michelle Mish Schneider is with us now. It's great to have you back, Mish. So what is a Bitcoin speculator? I dare call them investors. You can't call somebody who's buying cryptos an investor. Not at this point, can you?
No, I look at it more as I think speculator is a good term because it's like a commodity to me. I trade Bitcoin, Ethereum. I've even traded some XRP, although that's more investment. Like I would trade gold and silver and soybeans or any other commodity. And I think if you do that, it certainly keeps you from becoming emotionally involved as far as this long-term projection. It also forces you to think of it like a commodity, meaning you should have some kind of a stop. You should have some profit targets and not think buy and hold. So doing that has actually been, we've been in Ethereum and Bitcoin back and forth over the last, well, really 4 or 5 months. And actually 6 months, because we're in June now, we started in January. And except for one time, we've made money each time by being extremely nimble.
All right. So you're not buying Cardano, Uniswap, Chainlink, The Graph, and a bunch of other ridiculous names. AMP, Anchor, Augur, Balancer, Bancor, Network Token, Basic Attention Token. I guess that's what you get for people who have ADD or ADHD. You get them a Basic Attention Token. Cartesi, Civic, Dash. Oh, but the best one of all. We know the best one of all, Mish.
And that Doge.
Dogecoin. Elon Musk says so. Now, I have a crypto position, albeit a small one.
Oh, good.
It's kind of like I've had it for a while, but it's kind of like betting on a game where Cleveland is playing Dallas, all right, in the Super Bowl. Like, I couldn't care less about the outcome of the game, but having a couple bucks on it makes me all that more excited. It's not quite like that with crypto, but I feel like I can't really talk about it unless I own some. But, like, why do we need 12,000 cryptos? Do we need 12,000 cryptos? Is there one for every flavor? Like, they put Baskin Robbins to shame, you know, flavor of the week, the day, the month, the year.
Well, yeah, they definitely pop up like weeds. There's no doubt about it. But there is somewhat of a hierarchy if you look at just market cap in the crypto space. So my advice would be to really kind of focus maybe on the top five, of which Cardano is one of that you mentioned before. That's one of the reasons why we've been looking at Ripple, which XRP is the proper way to say it, because it actually does have some real positives about it fundamentally. And the biggest negative is the SEC thing that's going on and on and on. And a lot of people think at some point, either there'll be some kind of compromise, settlement, et cetera, then XRP will go public. But it's actually it's very fast transactions, under 4 seconds, very low transaction cost. It's a great border-to-border cross payment. It is being used internationally. Of course, the United States, no. And so for me, it kind of makes sense as an investment. But short of that, yeah, Bitcoin, well, what I like about it right now, and Ethereum too, is you can track it technically on a chart. Once I can look at something on a chart, then I feel very comfortable being able to trade it because I can see where it's going. Of course, the fact that it's 24 hours is a little bit disconcerting to some, but then so are commodities. You can trade gold all night long, silver all night long, the dollar all night long. You can trade E-minis all night long. So it's not really that much different. So you have to have a mindset where whatever happens from the close of the U.S. market to the open of the U.S. market, you just ignore. And that's kind of I try to do that, although I will admit that yesterday when I saw Bitcoin getting back over 38, 39, and now this morning 40, I was excited because we actually bought Bitcoin last week.
Oh, so there you go. Good, you? All right. Well, you know, I knew 65.5 was the peak for now. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't make me, this is like a problem with cryptos. The people who own them are cultists often. And the HODL philosophy, which obviously you don't adhere to, which is hold on for dear life. Right. You know, the only thing I'm holding on for dear life to, Mish, is a life preserver when the boat I'm on goes down and I'm in the middle of the ocean, then I'm going to hold on for dear life. But there's no such thing. I mean, you remember, this reminds me of like the 60s, the Nifty 50, right? One decision stocks, you buy it, and you hold on to it for life. And that is exactly what people did with Xerox, with Kodak, with IBM, which still survived to fight another day. But you know, those Nifty 50, most of them no longer exist anymore. They've been merged out or gone out of business. And to think that there's a one decision crypto that's going to make your life. Yeah, maybe it was back 10 years ago when you bought it at $5. But it's not at 65,000. Maybe it's going to go to 1 million, but this situation, this pullback was so predictable. The chart was screaming it. It was a parabolic move. Hey, you're a trader. How do you trade parabolic moves? What do you do with something that's gone parabolic after you bought it?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to say your base of knowledge always impresses me because I've just been doing a lot of research lately on the Nifty 50, particularly Gulf and Western, of course, is the way of the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. But one of the problems that happened with the whole Nifty 50 was the divesting. They divested to the point where they couldn't possibly keep up. And there's still a lot of that going on now with some of the big tech. People haven't talked about it very much, but they are also broadening into all different capacities. And that brings us a little bit back to Bitcoin, because what's really happening with crypto space is a lot of this divestment eventually will be paid for, I think, with blockchain technology, particularly when we're talking about music and art and entertainment field. So I just wanted to throw that in. Now, your other question about parabolic moves, to me, this is the way I've always traded from way back when I was just a little babe on the floor in the commodities exchange, which is I like to get in early. When I say early, it's not that I'm just buying something because it's cheap or I think it has value. It's generally because there's been some chart signal. So what I like to do is combine the technicals with the fundamentals. So I have to have some fundamental reason, whether it's an inflationary reason or it's a consumer instinct type reason, whatever it is, there's something in my mind that makes me like a particular commodity or a particular company. And then I'll look for a chart reason. So it has to be either it makes a new low, and I say a new low, I mean a 60 plus day low, and reverses, or it clears a major moving average, or it's had this tremendous period of consolidation and now it's breaking out. And the reason why is I like to get my risk as tight as possible so that if I'm wrong and I'm probing, then my loss is minimal. And then when I keep probing, the third time, sometimes it's the fourth time, could become the charm, and then you make it all back. So getting back to parabolic, by the time something is going parabolic, we're happily taking money off the table. Because as you know, once the public starts to get in, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the top because even that has changed. The public means now these retail investors that have come in numbers that we haven't seen probably ever. But nonetheless, you kind of know that once you get into that parabolic sentiment, things can continue to go up. But it's nice to know at this point, you're playing with a piece of it and you've already made the bulk of your money before the public fever really entered the space. So that's how I look at parabolic moves. I'm not going to buy, I'm not a big momentum trader. There's something to be said for momentum trading, but that's not my style because then your risk becomes a little bit more arbitrary unless you shorten your time frame to like, I'm doing it for a day trade or for a couple of days. I like to be in a trade for more like 3 days to several months. I've been in gold forever and a few other things like that. So,
and we're going to talk about gold in a little bit because it's got some questions about its current behavior. I have my thoughts about it. So parabolic moves, we've seen it. Bitcoin went from really a little more than a year ago, 5,000 to 65,000, right? 13-fold move. And not surprising, it's had seven busts, if I'm not mistaken, seven booms, seven busts. Each time it's a higher high, each time it's a higher low, which says your trend there, your trend line is great until it isn't. But this time, if it gets slammed, it breaks its 200-day moving average. It gets down to that 20,000 range. Are we buying? Are we selling?
Well, first of all, I'd say let's not worry about that right now because it's already proven that the 30,000 was sort of a double bottom. So I'm looking at this $40,000 to $45,000 level now to see what happens. So yeah, we bought it at like 35 because I wanted to make sure it held 30 before we got in. And I'm already looking to take a profit if it goes up a little bit more. When it went to 65, we had already just had a little bit of a tail left. And when it started to break down under 60, we were gone. And we've waited and waited and waited. So to get back to your question, yeah, if it gets below 30 and it gets down to 20, I wouldn't just say, because I don't like to buy a falling knife either. You know, going back to this value play I'm talking about or looking for some reason technically to get in after something has been hammered means that it has to prove that it can hold 20. So I might wait a week. I might wait 2 weeks. It depends on how long it takes and what do I see the volatility do at 20,000. If it goes from 20, pops up to 25, that tells me it's a little too fast. What was so nice about this last correction is it went to 30, it came back. It went to 30, it came back. And then it waffled between like 33 and 37, enough to give me confidence that the volatility had come in and then we could go in and strike. So that's the best way I can answer that question.
All right. So talk about falling knives, about buying something just because it's cheap. You still a Tesla believer?
Yes, absolutely, I am. And actually, this opportunity that it had trading between 560 and 585, when you had a major moving average on a weekly chart holding up, was probably one of the better opportunities. I didn't do it, but I watched it. And then when you I can't do everything. But that's okay. That's okay. I find that, you know, there's lots of trades that I watch and go, I knew it, and I don't do it. Yeah. That's where people, I think, also get into trouble because that's that old FOMO thing. And so they go, oh man, I didn't buy it at 580. You know, then I've got to buy it at 620. And now your risk is much greater. Right. But in terms of Tesla in its of itself, Elon still rules. I really would never bet against the guy at all. And the fact that now you have people like Bezos and Virgin Galactic, what's his name, getting involved in the space race. And right. Tesla's already there, or I should say Elon is already there. To me, it's a movement. It's not just a car. It's not just a car. And now that he's come back and said, oh, well, if we can prove that mining Bitcoin is not necessarily the evil doer to the environment, you can start buying Teslas with Bitcoin again. He put the attention back on Tesla. So I'm not surprised to see it up as we're talking.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how many people actually did buy a Tesla for Bitcoin and then bought the Bitcoin back after it went down. You know, that was kind of like the sign of a top when Tesla started taking it as legal tender, if you will. And, you know, like it's not the kind of thing that you really, it's not really a currency. It's an asset class.
Well, and also to me, it's also a little bit of the folly of the uber wealthy. the uber wealthy can afford to do that. Like somebody who just bought a penthouse in Miami with Bitcoin worth $23.5 million. You know, that's just not something that it's fun to watch and look at, but that's not the universe that we're operating in. So I just find that to be more of an amusement than anything. And I guess if I was, a multi-billionaire, might be more fun to do that and try to become sort of a, some kind of a leader in that space or somebody that people look up to. But you know, getting back to the whole Bitcoin thing, right now, inflation is a big reason. Another reason, forget about, let's put Elon on the shelf for a second and just look at what happened as we started this week in the market. And that is now you had Paul Tudor Jones coming out and saying, talk about old gurus. He was sort of the Elon Musk before Elon Musk, although without the innovation part. And he's saying inflation is here. Unless the Fed does something really radical, it's going to be a real factor and it's a real play. And I think that's what people kind of got back into Bitcoin a little bit, sold some of their gold. But that doesn't mean anything to me other than gold gave another buy opportunity when it too touched a major moving average on the dump Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and talk about gold. So I think that's like a great point you make. I remember reading Paul Tudor Jones. He was like a Barron's darling. He was always in Barron's. And he's a legendary investor for his day, for sure. But, you know, the idea of cryptos being a hedge against inflation, obviously with Bitcoin, there isn't going to, it's kind of like beachfront real estate. They're not making any more. You can mine a few more, but basically that's coming to an end. And, you know, 25% of the Bitcoin has been lost. There's that guy who his hard drive he threw out.
Right.
So I was thinking I would start a service, a hypnotic Bitcoin key recovery service for the people who've forgotten. Because I've got 0.2 of a Bitcoin floating around. At the time when I lost it, it was worth, I think, $60. And now it's worth like $8,000 or $9,000, and I care more about it now than I did then. It's just the idea that I had something of value. And who knows if it becomes worth $1 billion a coin? That's hundreds of millions of dollars I'm talking about here, Mish. I mean, maybe it'll be like the gold miners. The people who really cashed in were the Levi Strausses, and the people that sold axes and land claims and assay and all that. Maybe it'll be those are the people who are really going to make out on the cryptos.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Arcana Corporation is on the verge of bringing the world's highest grade silver mine into production. The Revenue Virginius mine in Colorado has proven improbable silver reserves grading nearly 37 ounces per ton silver with an all-in sustaining production cost of only $8 per ounce of silver. The mine is fully permitted with infrastructure already in place, and the company has announced they plan to commence production in 2020. Achieving successful production usually results in a significant upward share price re-rating on the Lassonde curve. Arcana trades under the ticker AUN in Toronto and AUNFF in New York. To learn more, go to arcana.com. That's AURCANA.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, two things I want to say. One is the other narrative when it comes to Bitcoin and inflation, of course, is the dollar. And the real threat to fiat currency with alternative currency and digital currency. So there's that floating around on all of that. But what's interesting, too, about the crypto space is everybody, and I mean everybody, is trading it, either one of the more obscure coins, like you mentioned at the top, or more popular coins. And here's a perfect example. And we used to say in the commodities market back in the day that when you get in a taxi and the taxi driver starts talking to you about gold, it's probably the top. But we're not seeing that right now. This is a real reverse phenomenon here. I went and took my car in for service a couple of weeks ago, and the guy who owns the place that they sell used cars. So if obviously we know what's happening in the used car market, and he also services car, and we had bought a used car from him. So he serviced our car. The first thing he talked about when I sat down, since everybody knows what we do for a living, me and Keith, was let's talk about Bitcoin. I've been buying it. I've been buying Cardano. I've been buying Doge. I've been buying Ethereum. I'm doing great. I can't believe it. And so it's so amazing. I mean, this is what makes me so pro cryptocurrency, is to watch guys and women, although I will admit that I hear it more from men than women, and I'd like to see that change. But it makes me feel good to know that small business owners are sort of supplementing what they're doing by getting involved in not only the alternative currency space, but of course, the meme stocks, which is a whole other conversation we can have.
All right. So here's the thing. Let's bring that saying up to date. Ben Graham used to say, when the elevator operator or the boot black, which is a shoeshine boy, is giving you stock tips or giving you stock tips, it's time to run for the exits. Now it's when the pole dance instructor or the Uber driver start giving you crypto tips. Maybe it's time to get out. Isn't that really a sign of a top more than a bottom?
Well, classically, one would think, but that's not what I see here. I see that this has become sort of, in some ways, the new American dream is, can you buy AMC and watch the Reddit army come in and now all of a sudden you've made a lot of money? Or can you get involved in one of the cryptocurrencies and make a lot of money? And the mindset has shifted again from a passive investment to, oh, let me get in, let me get out. And the smarter people, whether they are Uber drivers or own used car lots, are figuring this out. I can make quick money and I can exit. So the public, Kerry, is getting a little bit smarter. And that's a good thing. And then the other thing, yeah, I know you're shaking your head. I can see you doing that. But of course, listen, there'll always be people who will put their hand out with a marshmallow to an alligator, like we were talking about before. But then there's also going to be a lot of people who, because of social media, are getting smarter. Because of the access to education about trading is so much better than it used to be. And a lot of the great mystery around it has gone away. I think that's a part of it. And just to kind of offshoot on that, because it's all connected, is one of the questions I keep getting when I go on the media, because I go on Fox a lot and other stations, and they're all asking me the same question about, will people go back to work, or will their lazy asses stay home because they've had this money coming to them, et cetera, et cetera. And the way that I look at this is that it also has something to do with the fact that the retail investor is surging in the whole market space. And so it's an interesting sea change. So if there's a top coming, I'm not seeing it yet, at least not for that particular reason. Equity market, that's a separate topic. We can talk about that.
So I'll go back a little bit. As W.C. Fields said, never give a sucker an even break.
I love W.C. Fields. I used to cut high school. Oops, I'm telling you my age here. I used to cut high school to watch W.C. Fields movies.
Right. So, yeah, and Sucker is Born Every Minute and Two to Take. Yes. I think that was P.T. Barnum. But, you know, I'll defer judgment on the collective wisdom of the American public. I think H.L. Mencken also once said that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public. I'll put all that on hold and I'll defer judgment. But I think something more fundamental is happening here. And because up until the 70s, the U.S., we had bouts of inflation during war, at other times, but we never really had systemic inflation like that. You know, when there were wars, they'd inflate the currency, pay for it, and we'd see prices go up, and then there'd be price controls. That really was transitory. But then we saw it really in the 60s and 70s really become part of the culture. I think what's happened now, and what one reason why real estate's gone up so much, is people are in on the game. They get it that when you create all these currency units, whatever the purpose, however beneficial they might appear to be, you're going to get inflation. And when you create record amounts of them, you're going to get record inflation. And I think that's why people have been going to these hard things, doing their own personal de-dollarization, if you will. And because I think people somehow innately know that inflation is going to be here for quite a while, because the cure for inflation, at least in the eyes of any politician or in the Federal Reserve, is far worse than the disease. They can rail against inflation, but to actually do what it would take to get inflation under control could probably result in a massive deflationary depression. They're just not going to take that risk. They'll make pretend moves, they'll make gestures, but they're not really going to go down that road because they can't do it. Unless the dollar is really threatened, they're not going to do it. So
gold, I agree.
So gold, the gold is like, it's been very unimpressive. Silver, even less impressive than gold. And you think we're heading to the end of that period where it's going to like really make new nominal highs as well as new real highs?
I do. And actually, although you're saying silver has been unimpressive, and it has, and so has gold relative to what everybody's fearing about inflation, particularly when you look at the raw materials, not only in the housing and manufacturing industry, but also you look at the food commodities and the soft commodities, which of course have a component outside of government spending and Fed manipulation. And that's, of course, good old Mother Nature, which has been wreaking havoc also as well. I think what you have right now, that's really something to pay attention to, which could be showing now that we're about to go parabolic in the metals, gold and silver as well, is the silver to gold ratio has flipped in favor of silver. And those of us who are around long enough to know what real inflation looks like, and to know how emotionally charged that becomes, that's something that I'm finding to be particularly interesting right now, is that silver outperforming gold right here. If that trend continues, you're going to see gold fly, you're going to see silver fly, and that's really, I think, where you're going to start to see the switch, where people, I mean, people are still arguing, Bitcoin, gold, we're long both, why not? Yeah. They both serve different purposes. And when I was on Fox earlier, the gentleman I was on with said, well, gold is a currency and Bitcoin isn't. And that's the kind of divided thinking I think as a trader I try never to allow myself to entertain. I look at it, it's irrelevant. Bitcoin is an opportunity and gold is presenting as an opportunity. And particularly today, Monday, when we're speaking, where it touched down on the 50 and immediately bounced, but silver never even got close to selling off as much as gold. That signals, keep your eyes on that. Yeah, I'd be buying more silver, actually. I mean, we're already pretty long, but if I weren't involved, I would get involved.
Yeah, well, I have my permanent holdings and own far more physical silver than physical gold, even though the main benefit of gold is it's a lot easier to move around if you got to move it physically. You know, like you're out there, you never knew. I never knew how heavy silver was till I got a bag of junk silver. And it's like, this thing's heavy. Where's my son when I need him? He's a bodybuilder. But
he's the one with the new grandson?
No, that's my daughter.
That's your daughter. Okay.
He's in London now, so he's not going to be any good. But yeah, like I'm inclined to agree a parabolic move is coming. But, you know, it'll probably come when nobody's expecting it. And
of course,
you know,
that's what makes commodities so much fun. Don't go to sleep. Yeah. When we used to stand in the pits and nothing would go on for weeks on end, you know, don't you know, it was when everybody was in the cafeteria hanging out or said, let's just leave and go to the beach or go to the movies. That would be the day that the order flow would start. So you really, if you have that level of conviction, you can either get in and just hold and have, again, always, I'm always going to say, have a risk in mind, or you can wait till when that starts, because unlike other parabolic moves, this has yet to go anywhere near parabolic. If you get in at the beginning, I think you could have an opportunity, a real good opportunity.
Hey, speaking of parabolic moves, and then we got to move on ourselves, lumber. Okay, that is a fascinating, fascinating story there. It quadrupled in price, more than quadrupled. If it goes down 50%, it's still way higher than it was.
Exactly.
And it could still go higher, but law of, you know, unintended consequences, what it does to the housing market. like someone was telling me today, like builders have tacked on like 42% higher, housing prices because of lumber. Hey, copper is way up, but you know, that's used relatively little in new home construction, but lumber, except down here in Florida, where most of our houses are concrete block, not a lot. Even still, it's a sizable contributor to the increase in home prices, but also the inflation, you know, go back there. So the parabolic move, though, in lumber, where do you think it's going to settle out at?
It might have already settled. I would still certainly think that it came off, 20% off of its highs. That's kind of for commodities, a normal correction. I mean, it goes right back to what we were saying before, is that when things go parabolic and then all of a sudden the selling comes in and it starts, people think, that's the top. And sometimes it is. But in the lumber market, right, where we still have such fundamental reasons, there's been a housing shortage supply in general. A lot had to do with what happened in 2008, and builders went belly up, and there just wasn't a lot of new construction. Now, all of a sudden, you've got this demand from the pandemic to buy homes in areas particularly outside of the city, and their homes didn't exist. So it snowballed into the raw material prices going up and the home prices going up. Here in Santa Fe, there are homes, brand new constructions, going for $800 to $1,000 a square foot, from $250 as a high-end home average per square foot. That's mind-boggling. And even though the lumber prices have come down a bit from the highs, like we just said, the housing prices have not budged, really. So, I hate to scare people because it sounds like I'm scaring people when I talk about these things. But I look at it from the opportunity standpoint as a trader, like I said. So it goes back to buying commodities. Yes, there was a big dip on Monday in corn and soybeans, and I'm just kicking myself that I almost waited a little too long to get back into it. But if you're looking at sugar and you're looking at coffee, these things are still very, very firm. Sugar has doubled in price from a year ago. From March 2020, it was trading 9 cents a pound. Now it's close to 18 cents a pound. That's sugar. So this just gives you a bird's eye view of what we're going to experience, and not just lumber shortage and housing shortage, but also food shortage, because farmers stopped producing because the prices were so low. That's what farmers do. They go, there's a glut of supply, prices are down, they hedge in the futures market, and they cut back in their farming. And now all of a sudden, with demand going crazy, as we have to feed people, there you go. So all of it it's all connected.
Oh yeah, absolutely. These housing prices, I've never seen anything quite like it. The development where I am, I was just renting here for a while, started out, the prices are double what they were charging a year ago. And still the same property, it's still the same houses, and they're getting double. And that's, I never saw anything like it. I've seen real estate booms and busts. I've done really well in real estate over the years, lost a couple bucks a couple of times, but nothing compared to what I made. And now it's, I can't even believe it. I bought a home nearby because I got this inflation bug moving me on. And from the time I entered the contract to the time I closed, it went up over 15%. And that was several months. And right. I'm like, wait till I really fix the place up.
No, I hear these stories all the time. I have a friend who owns 5 rental properties in Austin. He bought each one for about $100,000. He hasn't sold them all, but he sold a couple. Bidding wars started at $250,000. Bidding wars, cash offers. Yeah. So this is not something, maybe it's a bubble in the works, but I don't think so. And that brings us a little bit back to the Fed, because what is the Fed going to do? What are they going to do? You're perfectly right on. Are they going to totally squeeze the rates higher? Well, they're going to kill the fragile economic environment that we have right now, particularly with the fact that even though America has gotten better and reopening more, we still have a global economy that's still dealing with COVID, and that demand hasn't even come back yet. And also we have a lot of situation here with where is the growth going to come from when it comes to getting beyond the reopening and the just the normal unemployment benefits are over. Now people have to go back to work. It has to come from some economic policy. And this infrastructure was my great hope on this. But now I'm not so sure what's going to happen with it. So we'll see. And that's the stress we're seeing, I think, right now in the market is not only the fears of the Fed tapering, even though I don't think they're going to do much at this point. But also, hey, what happens after we all come back from work? Maybe we'll have one more surge in job growth. But then what? Where are the jobs going to come from? Technology is really killing a lot of jobs. And that has to be said without judgment, because that's just the evolution of technology.
Yep. So true. Well, hey, that's what's been going on our entire lives.
Exactly. And so when I hear people, when I hear pundits go, oh, well, you know, technology is keeping people home and not letting them go back to the office or not incentivizing them to go back to the office. Well, guess what? That's been going on for a long time. The pandemic was just the shot in the arm, no pun intended, to really make that now much more of a thing.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I think we'll leave it at that. Make sure you check out Nish at marketgage.com, and you'll be happy that you did. Send us any emails for her if you got any questions, kl@carrieletz.com. Sign up for a newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Nish, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Carrie. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.